What causes narcissism? Is it nurture or is it nature?
One of the most amazing things that happens when it comes to narcissists and relationships is that we notice the traits are absolutely the same across various life situations. Is there something specifically neurological going on as the result of childhood abuse or trauma or neglect?
Not only are they sometimes very thoughtless and careless with your feelings, but they'll interrupt you, they're kind of rude, they're kind of disrespectful, especially once they get to know you. But in some cases, even when they don't know you. There's a theory that might explain everything, including the way narcissists behave in relationships, as well as how you fit into all of this. It's called attachment theory. Attachment is defined as a deep and enduring emotional bond that connects one person to another person. Attachment theory basically helps us to understand our relationships and how our relationships with our mothers could affect us and our lifelong development, and even our relationships with others in really profound ways.
Narcissistic personality disorder is one of just 10 personality disorders that are recognized by the American Psychiatric Association.
How is a narcissist's brain different than everyone else's? We all know that narcissists are seriously lacking in empathy, especially those who would be classified as having NPD or narcissistic personality disorder. That is, if they ever give anyone the chance to diagnose them officially. Side note, they won't do that because they don't feel there's anything wrong with them. But according to my research, people with narcissistic personality disorder do show less gray matter in the left anterior insula, which is the part of the brain that's linked to empathy. The layman's version of that scientific explanation is that those parts of the brain that mediate empathy, which is of course the ability to care about other people's feelings, are lower functioning and therefore less capable of focusing on others. In other words, a narcissist has less gray matter in their brain than someone who is capable of empathy.
They seem to have no problem when it comes to destroying someone else's self-esteem or someone else's day, even. In psychology, attachment theory, as we know it today, was first originated in 1958 when psychiatrist John Bowlby recognized the importance of a child's relationship with their mother. It turns out he realized that our emotional, social, and cognitive development are directly affected by our attachment to our mothers. Now, along with fellow researcher James Robertson, Bowlby found that children who were separated from their mothers would experience extreme distress. This would lead them to anxiety, and they assumed that this might have been related to the idea that their mothers fed and cared for them. But then they noticed that the separation anxiety would not diminish even when the kids were fed and cared for by other caregivers. The reason they thought this was because other researchers had sort of underestimated the bond between the child and the mother and assumed that the feeding of the infant was the thing that bonded the mother and the child. Well, Bowlby was the first to propose that attachment might be an evolutionary thing. As in, the child's caregiver is obviously the person who provides the child with safety, security, and food. So he thought being attached to the mother would increase a baby's chance of survival.
We know that NPD is characterized by arrogance, self-absorption, but now we also know there are structural abnormalities in that region of the brain that has been linked to empathy. Now, the left anterior insula region of the brain is believed to be involved with cognitive functioning, as well as the regulation of emotion. It has also been tied, of course, to empathy and compassion. One of the study authors actually said that while this area of the brain was already a region of interest for empathy, this study brought forth for the first time that empathy is structurally correlated in the brain.
Let's talk about a new research study that came out. Well, this research study found that not only could narcissists, especially those who were especially low in empathy, not only could they be rude, but it explained why they were rude. The study was done at the University of Alabama by William Hart and some other colleagues, and it kind of took into account the dark triad qualities. Those who tested high on the dark triad scale, a lot of those people have traits that are kind of related to psychopathy. So those include lack of impulse control, inability to empathize with other people, erratic lifestyle, lack of remorse, and then, of course, Machiavellianism, which is, of course, the tendency to exploit other people, seek power, and basically do whatever they have to do to get what they want in the world, to get their way.
In 2013, there was a report in the Journal of Psychiatric Research that discussed a German study where they had looked further into the causes of narcissistic personality disorder. But in that study, they figured out that the part of the brain that is associated with empathy and compassion, the cerebral cortex, was actually thinner in people who were known to have narcissistic personality disorder. So with the thinner area being what it was, it would make sense that the narcissists would score higher on the scale because, of course, they have the lack of empathy, which is one of the most notable characteristics. And then, of course, the grandiosity and self-centeredness that are all part of that whole NPD issue.
There are 4 primary attachment styles, including secure, anxious, preoccupied, dismissive, avoidant, and fearful avoidant.
Researchers say the differences in the narcissist's brains are actually literally causing them to turn inward and self-focus. In a German study, for example, researchers found that the degree to which a person was able to exhibit empathy was directly tied to the amount of gray matter in the brain, both in the healthy individual as well as those with narcissistic personality disorder. And narcissists were typically found to have less gray matter in the brain, according to the study.
So the combination of narcissism and all of these qualities, according to researchers, basically lead to what they call a relatively malignant approach to self-presentation. This brings me to the dismissive avoidant attachment style. This is where you might actually find a narcissist. Someone with a dismissive avoidant attachment style certainly appears to be emotionally independent and is likely often a little bit afraid of committing to a relationship with a single person long term. So they have commitment issues, right? They would have had parents who were either not around a lot or were negligent in their care in other ways. They might have been ignored or abandoned or undervalued in childhood. They felt rejected. They felt not good enough. They felt unwanted. And one or both parents might have been completely absent for this person. Their needs may have been partially served, but not fully. For example, maybe they got plenty of food and they were bathed on a regular basis. They had clean clothes, but nobody held them, or at least not often enough. They might also have been rejected by their peers as they got older, and they might have lived their lives feeling just not good enough entirely. This would leave them afraid to trust people in general, and as a result, they might be really likely to be dismissive of other people. They tend to cover up their insecurity with a sort of false sense of self-confidence.
Regarding self-presentation tactics, the researchers identified 12 of them and put them on what they called a subscale, those that were assertive and those that were defensive. In the assertive bunch, we had ingratiation, which is where someone uses flattery or agreement in order to be liked. And then we had intimidation, which means provoking fear in other people in order to be more popular or gain influence. That's a lot of times like what a school bully will do almost. But adults also use this tactic, as we all know too well. Supplication, where you look weak in order to let other people help you on purpose. So supplication, you might see that with the damsel in distress act, or entitlement, where you take credit for things that really aren't yours, or where you assume that you get something that isn't really for you. Blasting, saying negative things about other people in order to feel and appear better by comparison. Or exemplification, which is trying to actually serve as a positive role model. Now in defensive, we had excuse making, obviously denying responsibility, or justification, which is denying your own negative behavior and making excuses for it. Kind of fits with the last one. Then there's disclaimer, where you ahead of time lower your person's expectations of you and of the situation. Self-handicapping, which basically putting obstacles in the way of success so that you don't appear to fail even if you do. And then apology, which is in this case admitting guilt in order to convince other people that this isn't your normal behavior. Now there was another study done in 2010 at the University of Southern California that found that the part of the brain that regulates things like self-directed and obsessed thinking with these individuals was shown to have a much higher activity level in that part of the cerebral cortex.
While there are various types of narcissists, and while they do exist at various levels of toxicity, sort of on a spectrum, there are 4 basic traits that every narcissist has in common. According to a 2013 study, researchers were able to define the following traits as being shared among all narcissists, despite other definitions and forms of the personality disorder. It didn't matter if they were a covert narcissist or an overt one, or one of the many other types that we've defined. So what are the 4 qualities shared by all narcissists? Regardless of classification, all narcissists will display the following qualities. Number 1, they're selfish. Number 2, they disregard other people. Number 3, they are self-centered. And number 4, they lack empathy.
But when someone is dismissive avoidant and they manage to find a secure, loving relationship and they take the time to work through their own issues, well, they actually can manage to have healthy relationships. But unfortunately, for most narcissists, they don't develop the emotional maturity to do that, and they stay stuck in that attachment style.
I know a lot of these behaviors are going to make you think, oh my gosh, this is outrageous, especially when you think about behaviors like blasting behavior or the intimidation behavior, which is obviously bullying in both senses. And then knowing about and hearing about the defensive behaviors are kind of frustrating for most people because they think, I can't believe they've actually broken it down like that, right? Because you see it in your own life so much. Basically, I think the reason it's so frustrating is because it kind of shows you that people are actually thinking about how to make themselves appear better than they really are, or so that they don't appear at fault when they really are. It makes them feel better, and even if they admit that they're flawed, they are also sort of making an excuse for it inadvertently. And then when we're talking about the sincere apology one, that's a great thing, right? Except in this case, it's about trying to twist everything around so they don't seem at fault. So it's really more of a manipulation than a sincere apology.
All of this basically leads to the fact that narcissists have very low emotional quotients, or EQs. And now we have structural proof of that.
Let's talk about the fearful avoidant attachment style. Now this person, they might always be dating the wrong people for them. And on the flip side, they might also end up rejecting people who might be a really great fit for them. It's kind of an interesting thing. They might find themselves feeling kind of normal in unhealthy relationships, where they feel the need to earn the other person's approval. And they feel scared or they feel threatened when something seems too good to be true, or when things are going toward a bigger commitment like marriage. This person's attachment style might lead them to actually sabotage a really good relationship in some cases, maybe because they are afraid it will end and it might leave them feeling devastated. They struggle with jealousy and with distrust in relationships, even when it isn't warranted. This person probably grew up with parents who made it really clear that they were either unwanted or that they were not acceptable as they were. They can sort of be like a walking conundrum. They desperately want emotional intimacy, but they also push it away. They want to be in a committed relationship with the right person. They actively seek out the opposite, or they avoid relationships altogether out of a fear of straight up rejection. Now, psychologists say that this kind of attachment style can be kind of a combination of the dismissive avoidant and the anxious preoccupied attachment styles. They also say that it's a result of dealing with a lot of trauma or loss in childhood. Like the dismissive avoidant, the parents of this person may have been unable to fully meet their needs in infancy. They may have always, for example, been fed enough and wearing a clean diaper, but maybe they weren't held or interacted with enough, for example. They might also find themselves having really difficult relationships with their parents, or they might even become completely estranged from them in adulthood, as in no contact. Their parents may have been alcoholics or addicts or narcissists, and they may have been physically and or emotionally abused.
Of course, the environmental factor is also a big part of it, the nurture part. So those children who were brought up in situations where they were either excessively praised or excessively criticized, or who had a big childhood tragedy growing up, would kind of lend to becoming more narcissistic or higher on the NPD scale. Our EQ is a crucial measurement of our ability to understand ourselves and other people and to identify and regulate emotion.
So the researchers gathered up these people. They had them complete this STPS, which is the measure of self-presentation tactics, as well as, of course, the Narcissistic Personality Inventory, or the NPI. The way that they did it allowed them to sort of figure out exactly how each person in the study kind of fell on the scale. So they were looking to find out how honestly the participants would report themselves as using these tactics, as well as how useful each tactic had been in their life, plus how bad or how guilty they would feel if they used those tactics. I thought that was interesting. Then they were able to look across both of those different tests and figure out how high they were on the narcissism scale, where they fell on the Machiavellianism scale, and where they fell in psychopathy scores.
Since narcissists are known to have the avoidant attachment style, they can be relatively abusive, as you know, and they will always find faults in you. They will place blame on you, since some people with the avoidant attachment style can't take responsibility for their behavior. The more they do this, the more you become anxiety-ridden, and your bond with them will disappear if the vicious cycle keeps going. But the bond was never real to begin with.
The EQ can predict our career success, our relationships, and more. It's really an important and highly valuable asset to have.
While technically a narcissist might classify themselves under any of these categories, they're most typically identified as the dismissive avoidant attachment style, which is why they maintain a certain distance when it comes to their relationships and why they make you feel like you're unwanted or unneeded, even if if they clearly depend on you completely for narcissistic supply and, well, anything else.
Emotional intelligence appears to correlate with IQ. It is generally thought that you can train your emotional intelligence by learning to better understand your motivation and the motivations and the actions of other people. How about that? Who do we know that could benefit from that? Narcissist? Oh, yeah, good. Okay.
The dismissive avoidance style leads to being overly self-reliant, or appearing to be that way, and downplaying the importance of relationships. But they're quite vulnerable when it comes to a big crisis because they don't handle a crisis very well.
But while emotional intelligence can certainly be broken down into a series of learnable abilities, it is also strongly linked to our personalities and to the neurological processes. In many ways, our capacity for understanding emotions and controlling our own emotions is biological, as in we were born that way.
Now, they may have a super inflated opinion of themselves, and they can be very critical and suspicious of other people, which makes their relationships pretty miserable for anyone involved. Now, this is where you're going to find the overt narcissist, or the more kind of in-your-face narcissist anyway.
Our emotions are generally regulated by neurotransmitters and by hormones that our body releases in response to a range of different stimuli. So a good example of that would be when the body releases endorphins or feel-good hormones. These act as antidepressants, which help us combat pain and stress. They're produced when we think about people we love and when we're very happy. Oh, and also when we exercise. Meanwhile, we also produce cortisol, the stress hormone. We do that when we think about things that make us anxious or when we wake up to our alarm clock. Cortisol. We produce norepinephrine when we're scared, melatonin when we're tired, dopamine when we're focused and motivated. Ultimately, these chemicals tell our brain how we should feel about certain things, whether we should remember them, and how our body should respond.
But the covert narcissist can actually fall into the avoidant, fearful style, which seems a little counterintuitive since their victims can also fall into this category. Many people who could be classified as codependent might fall into the fearful avoidant attachment style. As adults, fearful avoidant types might become overly dependent on their relationships. While they might have had similar experiences in childhood, the difference between whether someone becomes a narcissist or a more empathic type of codependent would depend on how they deal with their own childhood experience when they are the fearful avoidant type. In either case, those who could be classified as fearful avoidant, they tend to be absolutely terrified of rejection, and they are constantly dealing with inner conflict. They sometimes thrive on drama, and they are nearly always suffering from low self-esteem. They're definitely prone to anxiety when it comes to relationships, whether they're super clingy or they're constantly avoiding intimacy.
But everyone has different levels of these chemicals, meaning some people are just naturally happier than other people. The good news is that tools like cognitive behavior therapy can teach us to control our reactions to things by seeing them in a different way, reframing, as it were. This is the first step toward better emotional intelligence.
So how is it that a codependent people pleaser could potentially fall into the same category as a covert narcissist? Well, it is the codependency factor. Both narcissists and their victims could be, according to psychologists, considered codependent because at its most basic level, codependency represents someone who has sort of lost themselves or never found it in the first place.
Empathy is controlled by mirror neurons, which fire in the brain when we see other people get rejected by a crush on TV. Our mirror neurons fire off and we feel sad for that person. Likewise, when we see someone smiling at us, our mirror neurons fire and we produce serotonin and we feel happier. This is what gives us empathy. This is what largely makes it possible for many of our social interactions. At the same time, when you see someone smile, you will tend to automatically copy that gesture and smile yourself. This in turn can lead to something we call facial feedback, which basically means that we produce neurotransmitters that are keeping in with the expression that we're pulling. So what does that mean? It means if you smile, your body is programmed to make you feel better. Your body recognizes that smile means happy and it gives you more of those happy hormones, happy neurotransmitters. So if you want to feel better, try smiling. Yeah, it works.
For narcissists, the lack of connection to their true self can then lead to a connection with a sort of made-up self or an ideal self, the mask that we often talk about with narcissists wearing. In contrast, a people pleaser might find their identity in getting approval from other people instead, or they might at least find value in themselves in this way. Otherwise, they feel worthless.
Does this mean that the structural abnormalities in a narcissist's brain lend to the idea that they are incapable of change? I think it's possible. possible.
Bottom line, what causes NPD is a combination of those specific conditions in the brain, as well as how a child was brought up and how they were raised.
If someone is more malignant of a narcissist or a psychopath or a sociopath or any other cluster B personality disorder, they are also more likely to be directly rude and disrespectful. Interestingly enough, narcissists in general are also thought to be emotionally immature. Like I've said before, they tend to be emotional toddlers, right? That's because when an infant is cared for by its mother, it does not think about the mother's needs at all, and that's very normal. It's expected. Most people do start to develop this awareness of the needs or feelings of other people on at least a basic level by the age of 2 or 3. Now, narcissists, they never develop it fully. So in some cases, even people who had really attentive parents can become narcissists, especially when their parents did not actively teach them empathy. Not everyone thinks of that.
Children who had happier, more stable childhoods, who were not dealing with childhood tragedies and or excessive praise or criticism, were less likely to become narcissistic, even if their brains looked like the brains of people who were diagnosed narcissistic personality disorder.
So basically, what it came down to was that when we talk about the tactic usage, those with dark triad traits were also the ones who were more likely to use the intimidation factor, as well as being the least likely to use the apology attempt at manipulation. They didn't see any benefit in serving as a role model. And even if apologies were self-serving, they didn't see any value in offering up apologies. But those with high scores would recriminate themselves if it helped them to get what they wanted. And they said they would use self-handicapping, and they believed it was highly effective. But those who had the dark triad qualities were most likely to be malignant, were most likely to be unapologetic for their behavior. They would act as con artists, they would act as liars, and they didn't care if they would be found out because they believed they could make excuses and get out of the trouble without a problem. Now it's time for the question of the day.
Question of the day.
Question of the day.
Question of the day. And the question of the day is, do you think that narcissistic personality disorder is a result of nature, nurture, or a combination of both?
Share your thoughts, share your ideas, and share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you right there and right there. And while you're at it, hit the subscribe button right there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.